Nate Schmidt and the Vegas Golden Knights are going to the Stanley Cup final. What was, I don't know what the final score was on the game where they, it was 2-1. I turned it off after they got the lead, so I missed the end of it. But Ian, what do you make of a team that did not really exist this time last year going to outlasting 29 teams? I'm not sure what the math is. Yeah, outlasting at least 29 teams. They're either going to play the Bolts, which seems more likely than not, or the Capitals in the finals. What do you think about all that happening?
Well, I thought it was a really great moment when they won. I want to say that, you know, a lot of the general managers made bad moves, and I think that is true. But I also think that they really came together as a team and really, really played well. And they play a system of hockey where they really use their speed, and no players can really get clean into the zone. They really interrupt teams. So I think it was just a complete effort. You know, they just have guys that really slot into roles. And while they don't necessarily have like super, super top line players beyond like maybe William Karlsson, they have a bunch of second line guys and all throughout the lineup. And then you saw on defense, you see guys like Nate Schmidt become perhaps one of the best defensemen in the league. We saw hints of that last year, even though maybe some people in the Caps didn't. And Marc-Andre Fleury has just been unreal. I mean, he has just been unbelievable.
The thing about like what you said at the beginning there, like how like the GM sort of make goof ups, is that like the Golden Knights as a success story is based in everyone else goofing up. Like, you know, there's GMs who just have talent evaluation problems, and so they let players go. I think most, you know, acutely with the Florida situation where, you know, Marchessault getting up there. And I don't think anyone really saw Karlsson doing what he's doing. And I'm not sure that I would see Karlsson doing what he's doing next year. But the fact that he's kept it going this long enough should at least give us pause and have us take a deeper look at it. But like the old school hockey guys screwed up. The league didn't screw up. I don't think the league like stacked the deck. Nobody at the time of the expansion draft was like, man, these guys are going to be stacked. No one thought that. Even after, before the draft, after the draft, when they saw the names on the roster, I think a lot of people thought they screwed up a little bit. I mean, I thought that they got the best pick they could have gotten out of Washington, though I thought they would have gone for Grubauer. But the fact that they've just proven everybody wrong, and the fact that they've got a hook into every other club in the league because they've pulled a player from them, just makes them such an attractive topic. It's just such a great story in the league. And you know, at the heart of it for me is Nate Schmidt, who is, you know, getting so much ice for that defense. And he had a couple rough months in the beginning there, but once he got away from that Spezza pairing, he's been just freaking excellent in minutes that were so tough, minutes that people told me he would not be able to fill in Washington. But if he had, I mean, if you look at some of the other guys that, you know, Washington said goodbye to last year, you know, Carl Alstner hasn't played hockey in 2.5 months now, right? Like, Nate Schmidt's going to the Stanley Cup Finals. Don't tell me that he was ever 7D. You jokesters. I'm over the moon happy about what's going on in Las Vegas. And I really hope that they get to play the Washington Capitals so that one of these two teams has to be just the best damn story in sports.
You know who else wants to play the Washington Capitals? Nate Schmidt.
Is this what you're working on right now?
Yeah, what I'm in the midst of writing right now is he was the interview after the Golden Knights won and clinched, and they basically asked him, you know, Washington's still one of the teams that are still in, and he's like, oh boy, I would really love to play them, as in like he'd really want to, like, you know, send a message of, you know, you let me go, this is what happens. So
hell yeah. So while you were saying that, I looked it up. They played twice. I remember the first game right before Christmas was a 3-0 just blowout. We got whipped by the Golden Knights. I said we, as in we are Washington Capitals. Please take note. Peter does that every once in a while. And then in February, the Knights beat the Caps 4-3. So it's been a 7-3, two losses that the Knights handed the Caps. Although maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Is there anything else you want to say about Nate Schmidt and the Vegas Golden Knights? If not, let's get this podcast going and we can talk about the Caps.
Yeah, let's do it.
And now it's time for the RMNB podcast.
All right, so I mean, I don't know how we're going to talk about Game 5 here. The Washington Capitals got just mud stomped, is the way I put it, in the recap, which some people took offense to. But the Tampa Bay Lightning, for the first time this series, the team won on home ice. Just in the opening minutes, opposed to the first and the second period, Tampa was just ready to go, whereas Washington was just completely not, and the puck was in Washington's end the whole time. The you want to do with the shot attempts or one that matter, but like if you just look at scoring chances, I think it was like 16-1 in the first period. The Caps were never in that game. The fact that they got that late goal seemed to be more a function of, you know, Tampa just sort of giving up on everything past center ice and just not trying to do any attacks after a certain point. I don't give the Caps a whole lot of credit for that comeback, is what I'm saying. And it was pretty demoralizing. That said, I don't think that the Caps should be too hung up on that miserable effort on Monday night in Game 6.
Yeah, one thing that me and you discussed the night before was you dropped in a tweet about how Matt Niskanen at first, whoever first tweeted it, said that he took blame for all three goals. And I remember the first thing I said to you was, oh, he must be, you know, is he being a veteran leader by taking a lot of the heat off Orlov? And then I rewatched all the goals from the goal end, and these are the GIFs I put up in the story last night. And yeah. I would say he was absolutely at fault for all three goals, and I'm glad that he took responsibility for it. I mean, some of them were broken plays, but individually, I mean, he got burned by, Anton Strahlman on that third goal? I mean, that cannot happen, period, who's a number one.
I had been thinking, I was convinced up until a couple of days ago that Anton Strahlman was like injured and just wasn't able to play this series, but he looked possessed in Game 5. So are you saying that you what did you make of the Steven Stamkos? I mean, it was never possibly a slew foot because there was no like upper like action happening, but like Stamkos's skate went into the back of Niskanen's skate and then sort of like sent him, you know, feet overhead prior to that. Was that the opening goal or the second goal? That was the second goal.
It was.
Did you think that should have been called a penalty?
I mean, when you slow it down and look at a slow-mo, I mean, of course it's a penalty. I think in real time, he kind of clinks skates. I don't necessarily agree with Barry Trotz that Orlov had complete possession of the puck because the puck was bouncing. So it was one of those calls where I could see it going against the Capitals. I'm sorry. It's one of those calls where I can see it let go, especially in playoff hockey. You know what I mean? But what I was confused about was that there was only one power play last night. I mean, that was ridiculous.
That was wild. I'm sorry. You corrected me, but I was wrong there. So Palat scored from the high slot, and it was Orlov who was tripped by Stamkos. And I guess Niskanen was supposed to be marking Palat and just didn't.
Well, yeah, he went down to one knee and he took away Holtby's sight angle. So you could see that Holtby barely reacted to the shot because Niskanen took away all his sight on the, if you're going to go down to one knee, you have to block the shot, period. Yeah. Like if you don't and it's on net, it's going in. So or that was Niskanen.
Yeah. Let me ask the question I think is sort of begging to be asked, and something that as an analyst, I don't like to write about. I definitely don't like to write about these recaps because it just seems so spurious, but did you think that Holtby sucked or like no. We're not getting what we need out of Holtby, but like is he what's how much do you put on Holtby for that loss last night?
Almost none of it. I mean, those are breakdowns. I mean, like I said, the third goal, Strahlman just goes right around Niskanen and the puck's bouncing in the air. He makes the initial save, which is what he needs to do, and then it just gets punched in after Ovechkin like checks I forgot who scored, but you know, even on the first goal, I mean, I just don't see. I mean, you want your goalie to make sometimes superhuman saves, but I don't even think these are like saves that are possible to be made sometimes. And people get so on the Holtby about stuff, like people who are kind of more broader hockey fans that are still understanding the nuance of the game. It's easy to blame the goaltender, but yeah, a lot of times it's everything else. You know what I mean?
Well, no, you nailed it because like it's the most tangible thing, right? Like what's going on with the goalie is at the surface layer. It's the same thing with lines, and we fall victims as well. Like the thing that if you want to critique a coach on is going to be lines first and foremost. Like when I just like excoriated Adam Oates for his stuff, I think like I tried to make sure that no more than like 5 of the 17 items in that list were about his lineup choices. And, you know, lineup choices tell you about player evaluation. They tell you about your ability to adapt to changes. But it's really just like, here's something to react to every single game day. And like, here's something that you can be a total jerk about. And the same thing with goalies, right? Well, I thought he should have had that save, which is just one of my least favorite phrases in hockey. Oh, he's going to want that one back. Just these like totally meaningless vacuums of information. That said, Holtby is not playing above expected, or he hasn't played above expected really since the end of game two. And man, we really, really need him to steal him like he did in that Columbus series in game six. The thing that I find comforting in a perverse way is that game five to me felt like one of those really close series between the Caps and, you know, probably like the Penguins in the years past, where, you know, games 1-6 are just so tight and maybe the Caps squeak out a victory. But last night was like game 7, where they're just like, okay, we're gonna just put a stinker in here to end up the season. It's just gonna be a disaster. I feel like the Caps got that out of their system, and they can play like those other games now. They played the terrible game last, so
I have a little bit of a
meaningless goal. Go ahead, go for it.
I actually think that ever since game two, Tampa has just been taking it to them, and it seems like Tampa is playing with speed. And they're putting a lot more pressure, especially on the first pairing. And we're seeing stuff from the Capitals that we saw maybe like in the beginning, midway through the year, where there are just these breakdowns. And it's just kind of dumb hockey sometimes. And I think that's the thing that I have pessimism about going into Monday. I agree with you that, perhaps they got their stinker out of the way. I don't think there's any reason why they can't win two straight. I think that they were definitely the better team in the first two. And I mean, they took it to them, but they need to make some adjustments. I also think they kind of lost their mojo with their lines. This sounds really stupid, but like taking, you know, Nathan Walker out of the lineup after game six, taking Travis Boyd out, putting Nicholas Backstrom. I know this is crazy, but they kind of have lost their mojo a little bit. When Burakovsky went back in game one, they just don't look like the same team. And I think sometimes when you lose big players like Nicholas Backstrom, everybody kind of comes together and gels. And you have guys like, you know, Travis Boyd, that's just going to come in and play 200%. Dumb down his game, just play simple hockey. And that's the type of thing you need sometimes in these playoff series, where you're just grinding it out. But you know, like the fourth line doesn't seem as dangerous anymore. All throughout the lineup, it seems like their secondary scoring has evaporated. The first line's having trouble scoring because, you know, Tampa's really kind of put the nuts and bolts on them. So I'm less optimistic, just because I think Tampa has kind of figured out how to beat the Capitals. And I think that's why they've lost three straight. It's just Tampa has refound why they're a good team, and they're taking it out on the Caps.
All right. Let me do my best to respond to that. So first of all, I agree with a lot of that. I don't know that, you know, I do. Nathan Walker should probably be playing over Alex Chiasson, but I understand that that's not likely to happen. And I know Alex Chiasson has gotten some big, you know, clutch goals and stuff, but I also think that those goals probably have not made up for his, you know, failures on the line there, or his problems with penalties. And I know that when we talk about penalties, everyone's going to talk about Lars Eller, but Lars Eller's probably has a closer penalty differential than some other forwards on the team, like Chiasson, like a player who I think is having a great playoffs, Chandler Stephenson, who is also just having some trouble committing penalties. And I think that probably is what lost them. What was it, game four? Mm-hmm. But like, if you look overall, I think the Capitals are really doing a great job driving play against a team that's excellent. If you look at like scoring chance numbers during even strength, the Caps are whipping it. I think that there's something still happening with shot quality, with like the high danger chances. And I'm not sure where it's located, but I've got some horrible feelings that I've got some suspicions about where it's happening for the Capitals, who's getting lit up. But like, if you know, shot attempts belong to the Capitals, scoring chances belong to the Capitals. The gut shot stuff, the stuff that's beating Brayden Holtby, except for that like Palat, you know, high slot goal, the stuff that's beating Holtby are power play, which the Tampa Bay is getting way too many of, and these low gut shot chances that some players on the Capitals just aren't fit enough to stop, and the system isn't supporting them. And we, you know, if you look at like the first period of Game 5, and for by God's sake, don't look at the first period of Game 5. Burn that tape. Forget that ever happened. But like, if you look at that, that's not a good representation of the way the Cap has been playing for however many other periods of this series. Like, I don't know. I think that they can do it. I think Lars Eller's line has been weirdly stifled. I was kind of happy to see Ovi play with Backstrom and Wilson later in that game, especially because Kuznetsov scored without Ovi in that one. Like, those guys don't need each other, and I think it, especially once Tampa was getting the matchups they liked, and those matchups were turning out well for them, to have the, like, DeBerry Trotz make some change, even if it was a change out of desperation, was the right move. I don't know what to think will happen on Monday, but I know that it won't be the function, it won't be determined by the fate that is a jinx, which is what I'd like to talk about now, if that's right with you.
That's fine.
Let's start with the easy things. After game two, I wrote an analysis piece saying the Capitals are the real deal. Here's why. Statistical analysis. Here's how they changed their way better. Here's what's working. Here's what's not working. You wrote an article collecting, you know, like Vegas odds, like Bovada, or I guess Bovada is international, but like sports betting odds. You're saying, oh, the Capitals are the number one pick. Every day, Michael Blake McCurdy would, Hockey Viz, he's ineffective math on Twitter, posted, you know, his, what is it called? The Rainbow Death Crab visualization, just like the brackets showing that, oh, the Capitals are the most likely to win the Stanley Cup now. Oh, now Vegas is, now the Caps are. Those are all things that people go, ooh, I don't know about that. How dare you publish this? And for us, and I always say this, but like, it's like a performative jokey thing to say, oh my God, don't say that. The Capitals are going to blow it now. But then after game two, two young men went to,
I think it was three, Capitals. Wasn't it?
No, it wasn't after game three, because it was before game three.
Saying, I think it was three guys.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm only aware of the one person who's, I guess I've seen two guys on Twitter now.
Uzi Koozie.
Okay, let's just call him Uzi Koozie from now on, because that's way better than calling him the broom guys. They brought a goddamn broom to Kettler's Capitals Iceplex and had a guy who wasn't playing, had, I'm sure, is a hairline fracture in his hand somewhere, Nick Backstrom, sign a broom. Nick Backstrom, I understand he probably has different social idioms and maybe did not understand what the meaning of the broom was. Surely was a failure of protocol there on part of the fan, on part of Nick Backstrom, and on part of everyone at the arena that was within vision of this and did not do something to step in and say, sir, do not do this. The Washington Capitals are in the Stanley Cup Conference Finals for the first time in two effing decades. Please chill the F out. No one did that. And then the Capitals lost three straight. And obviously these things are directly related. True or false?
False. But, you know, I wrote about it because I found it funny. And I found that the optimism was refreshing, especially because ever since we've started the site, everyone is just relentlessly negative. And it's that kind of optimism that, you know, I do think it's a little jinxy. Do I believe in jinx? No, not at all. I mean, as a hockey person who has seen this team lose so many times and how luck is involved in a lot of those losses, you know, you start kind of making up reasons for why things can happen, but absolutely not. I mean, this had nothing to do with them. It was a fun thing. They were really excited. I had to post it though, because it was so, you know, for me is that if something is conversation worthy, it should be put on the site. You know what I mean? It's like, we should talk about the things that are going on. That,
and you're
are
being too defensive. You're being too defensive. This is fine. You were not on trial here. And I think that we're really just having a show trial for the broom guys, for Uzi Koozie here. But they're also not on trial because they did nothing wrong. Seriously, they did something profoundly wrong within the side, like the fictional safe universe of being a fan. They did something that was a profound crime against humanity and the universe. But in the real world, they did nothing wrong, and people who are giving them a hard time are the most wretched fans, and they need to chill out entirely. I can't write to publish the article.
Wait, what did you say? I'm sorry.
You were absolutely right to publish an article about the goofballs.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been proven me right, too, that NHL Network wanted to talk about it. Everyone has had a reaction to it as an artist. I mean, for me, I don't necessarily feel like I'm on trial, but I think a lot of people would be interested on why I published it. And my Fair thinking enough. From as a writer is that anything that people are talking about should be on RMNB. And if it's something that is really interesting, you know, we should all have that conversation about it as that's part of our value to Caps fans. So I didn't publish it to be like, you know, a D-I-C-K and try to put a finger in the eye of people.
I'm sorry. You know? I have to step in. Did you just spell out dick?
Yeah. Sorry. That's a dad thing when you have a 1-year-old son.
Does your son understand human anatomy and then like vulgar terms for them yet?
No, I guess not. But you get in that routine.
Fair enough. Get into it early, I suppose. All right. Fair enough. I have nothing else to say.
No, the death threats are just the death threats that these guys are getting. The angry stuff. I mean, we've learned from Bartman. All right. The Chicago Cubs won a World Series. I know that things fell apart for them after that Bartman foul ball happened, but that's not why they lost. They lost because they lost. It's not. People want to be lazy in their heads and blame something supernatural instead of my team lost. It just did not work out. And I think that I hope that people can show these individuals who are, again, being optimistic and fun, which is what we want. You know, I don't want to be a fan police person who or police fans and be like, this is how you should act. This is how you should be. But I think we should have fun. We should be enthusiastic. That's what makes hockey fun for me. And so we should not, you know, make these people feel bad about who they are. And I think, you know, on top of that, too, is they learn something through this process of that this really bothers people. We won't do that again in the future, which is fine. But everything beyond that, I just think is way too much. And I've been really disappointed in some people, you know, like. You know, it's just if you actually think about things, you know, it seems like the people that are criticizing them are like the straw men, you know?
Yeah.
And Peter, the maybe Anton you can explain straw that. Men. Yeah. But like the people who like argue arguments by having some kind of straw man argument that has nothing to do with what anyone is talking about. It's, you know, I think people are just reaching here to be mean, you know, because they're mad.
Everyone's so worked up at this time of year that it's very easy to take that anger, that anguish out on other folks. Mm-hmm. I have no interest in, and if, even if I did have an interest in doing this, it wouldn't be effective. I have no interest in out-logicking people who like, oh my God, I'm not going to lawyer on somebody who's, you know, cranky about that. I am by the way, it's an entertainment product, and the broom thing is an entertainment story, and I listen to a bunch of hockey podcasts. Everyone's talking about it. It's delightful. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that these guys are wrapped up in it. They seem like they're very smart and thoughtful people, and they burned the broom. That's all that matters.
They didn't have to do that either. You know,
no, they did. But now I'm inside the fake universe of fan world again. I'm not in the real world. They had to burn it, but they should have kept the ashes inside of an urn and had Nick Baxter sign that. now, I just want to revisit something, because the Caps have two they have at least one elimination game ahead of them. Did you see the tweet? I think Tom pulled it up first. I guess I'll say it. It's a Twitter account called like Penguins Jesus. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yes. I retweeted them too. Yeah.
Oh, you did. Oh, you're that monster. So Penguins Jesus. I guess I'll have to embed this in the article. But they said, I guess after game one, they said, oh no, sorry. Prior to game one, they said Tampa's going to sweep the Penguins. Tampa's going to sweep Washington. Then after game one, they said, oh, it's just going to be a gentleman sweep where you give him one win, then you win the next four. And then after that, he said, it's going to be the Southern gentleman sweep. So it's the series was 2-0 Caps. And he said, it's going to be a Southern gentleman sweep where you win two games, then the other team wins four. He's in serious hazard of being right. And I don't want to live in that kind of world.
Penguins Jesus, son. He's a Nostradamus of hockey.
Speaking of past playoff pain, you spoke with one of my, in my Mount Rushmore of Caps players, which would be a fun exercise if we did real quick. One of those heads for damn sure belongs to Mike Knuble. And I'm only disappointed that you didn't ask him about the 2010 playoffs specifically and what that room was like. But you did talk about that kind of vibe in general and the gripping that sticks too tight. Some fun fact about Mike Knuble is that he first, and you know this obviously because you spoke to him, and we'll have this interview in just a second here. He won the Stanley Cup in 1998, which I think was his first year, with the Detroit Red Wings, which when they beat the Washington Capitals last time, they made it to the finals in what was George McPhee's first year as a general manager with the team he basically inherited from David Poile. And now George McPhee's back in the finals 2 decades later with the team that he inherited from every other GM in the league. Fun facts. That's all. what did you think of your chat with Mike Knuble?
Well, I remember when he first arrived, and this was something that I've talked to Gordo about, is that a lot of the guys that went to college are just very, very articulate. And I thought that his conversation was, you know, he didn't really get into a lot of the nitty gritty per se, but he did talk about a lot of the stuff that he's seen with Ovechkin and how he's improved, and just kind of like the past playoff things. I actually found the most interesting conversation to be about his NHL debut, and it was during the Avs Red Wings, like bloody rivalry where everyone was fighting and there was like line brawls and what it was like to be a part of that. But he's just an incredibly gracious guy. The end, what he ended with is worth listening for the interview about. I asked him about Knuble's nights and what he was hoping to do. And it was really funny. I also was surprised because I think he tipped his hat that he reads the site. I think that's what he did.
I know exactly what you're talking about because I edited it, and I won't spoil what he wants to do when he's in Maryland. But the... You're so right that he's like, yeah, I sold that video. I'm like, Mike, do you have Fresh Machine bookmarked?
How crazy!
We're insane super fans. Like the Knights were loved him and ingratiated them to. Like, yeah, I get it. I would do it too. I mean, if I had a website writing about me, the question is, does Nate Schmidt read the site?
You know, I do know that he does. So. I don't know if he does it during the season, but I know that he has in the past.
You know, I had to delete some old tweets about Nate, not like his family.
Oh, that's probably for the best.
Early for bit, your career. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we'll cut to that interview in just a second there. Ian, any closing words about game six coming up here on Monday?
I mean, I really hope that the Capitals win both games, obviously. But if they don't go to the Stanley Cup final, I ask, I pray, I beg of you to please see this season as a success. Because in the first few months, things were really, really bad. This team never really kind of put it together until the very end of the season. This team, you know, a lot of people were like, well, you know, people said before the season we weren't going to make the playoffs. No, no one said that. No one said that. But during the season, they had issues.
I might have said something in like November.
No, but that's what I mean, is that once we saw the underlying play of this team, this was a team that could miss the playoffs. I mean, the underlying play was very, very bad. So to see how they've kind of come together and gelled, this has been a beautiful thing. They got past the second round. There was no reason why they should have done that this year out of all years. So I think people should really enjoy what has happened this year. I know it's going to be disappointing. I know the conference final is not a given any year. This may not happen for a really long time. But if they don't get to the Stanley Cup final, I ask that people try to use their logic brains and try to enjoy it as much as they can and be proud of the boys, because the boys really, really came together.
Now that you said that, it's not going to happen. If the Caps lose either of these next two games, it's going to be just a toxic pit of toilet water on the Rush Machine comments, in our mentions. It's going to be intolerable, and we're only going to make it worse when we unabashedly climb upon and subsequently lead the Vegas Knights bandwagon and just go wall to wall Knights coverage as if they were our OG team from day one, which secretly they were. But God, that said, man, I want a Caps Knights final so bad.
That would be so fun.
Every ounce of my body. I'd also like it. Just a thought I had, if the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup, that'd be cool too.
Yeah, that'd be cool too. But just having GM versus GMBM. I mean, that's just, people who love abbreviations. Schmidt versus everyone.
Ovi versus Sipichoff. Wait, no, he left. He got kicked off the team.
Where is he now? Who was it again? Moscow.
Sipichoff.
Oh, yeah. He's back in the KHL. Yeah. And George McPhee continues to rip him in the media. I love it. It's classic.
Gerard Gallant was fired, was left at like a curbside before he got the, remember that? Like, he was, yeah. I think what, like the Florida Panthers were playing in Carolina and they, you know, they lost because that's what the Panthers did. And they're like, oh, you know what? You're just going to stay here. We're going to go without you. See ya. And Gallant's like, all right. And McPhee, like sometime last summer, is like, you know, Gallant's a good coach. And God, it's just so great how awful, you know, like the Florida Panthers through just not just ineptitude, but like arrogance, like Greek tragedy hubris, gifted a head coach and, you know, two top six forwards to Vegas Golden Knights, which ended up being, I don't know, somewhere around like 80 goals. God, it's such a great story. And I want the Capitals to beat them, I guess. Anyway, Ian, closing thoughts, closing words.
Let's go Caps. Fingers crossed for game six. No brooms.
All right. Here's Ian speaking with Mike Knuble. Let's go Caps. Down.
I guess, like, first of all, could you kind of update all of us on what you're up to now up in Michigan?
Yeah, no, we are, you know, so I've really, like, enjoyed being retired, and I enjoyed being around the house and raising kids and going to sports. And I've been coaching a lot of youth hockey. Coaching my older boy now is in Muskegon, the USHL. And then my daughter is a year younger, was a big lacrosse player, but just blew her ACL for the second time.
Oh, no.
And then, same knee, second time. And then my young guy is rising Bantam major, so I've enjoyed doing that. And so, and then when I when they're in school and stuff during the day, I've been I work for the Griffins, Grand Rapids Griffins in town here, which is Detroit's farm team. So I get to be on the ice every day with them and working with the young players and kind of learning a lot about coaching. And I don't know, it might be something coaching a pro is a extremely busy job. And I'm just not ready to commit to something like that. I like coaching my boys and having my freedom and having the flexibility. And I kind of, Detroit's been very good to me about working that out, where I can kind of come in and I make as many practices as I can. If I'm in town and they're practicing, I'm there, you know. And then if the team goes out of town and somebody's injured and left behind, I kind of take them and make sure they get a good workout in and all that. On the bench for games when I'm there and stuff. So it's been pretty good. You know, it's been fun and enough to keep me busy without stressing me out too much.
Yeah, I can imagine. I have a 1-year-old, and I can't tear myself away from him when I actually have free time. So I can only imagine how you feel.
Well, yeah, you know, like when we were young, I mean, the kids were, you know, we were just, you know, that's how you did. You go play, go practice, go to the rink, and go home, you know, and wipe butts and put kids to sleep and wake them up and read books, you know, and that's kind of what you do. And I think a lot of players find that a little bit refreshing, because you are so focused in when it's just you and you're single, and then maybe you get married and, you know, it's just you and your wife, and it's kind of like all you have is your social circle of your team, and that's hockey, and then you get a kid involved, and some of them try and get dogs, and dogs are the first step, you know, and then you start having kids, and it's a great distraction. Suddenly you don't take your nap exactly at the same time. Suddenly, you know, you might not eat the best food all the time, you know, and it goes to show you're actually probably a little more balanced in your life. And
Yeah.
Seemed to me, I played much better hockey once all the kids started coming around, my career really took off.
Really?
I can't really correlate that, but it just seemed I enjoyed both. I enjoyed, playing, in the NHL and that, and having that life, and then, enjoyed having kids around and stuff like that too. And so for you, it gets better. Every year it gets better. So.
Gosh. when you first retired a few years ago, what was that transition like for you at first?
It was actually, I think a couple things. I played so long. I think I finished in Washington at 39. Mm-hmm. I wanted to play as a 40-year-old, which I eventually got to do. But I tell you, that lockout in 2012, and it really... really created a buffer, with me. I think I was I turned 40 that summer, and I really wanted to play as a 40-year-old. I knew I was pretty close. Like, I finished pretty strong in Washington. I knew I could probably play somewhere if I had to. But what happened was like combination of me turning 40, that lockout in the fall of 2012, and it just created a little bit of a buffer to take a step out of the world of the NHL, and kind of be like, face facts, be like, hey, we're 40, there's a lockout, there's no guarantee you're coming back from a lockout. And then we kind of budgeted time for that, timing of a house being built. And we had taken some steps as planning it. And so that fall, I got to coach my kids in hockey. I got to wake up, and I still skated. I actually came back and I skated with the American League team here in Grand Rapids. And that's kind of how I started with them.
Oh, wow.
I skated. Yeah. My wife and I are from here anyway. But it's kind of start. Jeff Blash was the coach of Red Wings now. He was the coach here. So we became very good friends while he was here. Lived right out of the corner, too, actually. So I was skating with them. I was getting that. I stayed busy in that respect. But at the other time, but I could cut out any time to go to a practice. Or if the kids had to go play hockey in Detroit or Chicago, I was more than happy to go on the road and do that, be on the bench with them. So I just kind of got in a holding pattern there, And then the lockout was solved, and I played one game in Grand Rapids. I would have been content just playing in Grand Rapids the whole way. Just finished the year there. They won the championship that year in the American League, but I played one game, and then I was very happy. I went to Philly, and everybody else stayed back in Michigan, and, again, achieved my goal of playing as a casualty of the lockout. I wanted to make sure I played after. I didn't want to be one of those guys that was a lockout casualty that did come back. That's kind of how it happened, and then I probably could have played again. As a 41-year-old, I probably could have extended myself again, but I kind of got a taste of retired life, and being home and doing some of the social stuff and being on the road with the kids. I was actually having a pretty good time. And so I think when you retire, it's kind of like looking over the fence and seeing what's on the other side, and you're a little bit scared of what's over on the other side, but then you hop over and you feel like pretty good. This is actually pretty good over here, And so the big thing was I played long enough, and I played till I was 40. I mean, you can't complain about that too much. So you can't want much more than that, realistically.
How does it feel to watch this team finally kind of get past, their demons since, 1998?
Yeah. No, in 1998, I was a young guy with the Red Wings.
Yeah.
We beat Washington and won it all in Washington, a new building. The building was brand new. You pick up the national media and sort of the players' attitudes was just getting past Pitt, and that was a big, big moment for the cluster, for the nucleus of the guys that have been there, like Jay and Nick and Alex and, Brady and all those guys, Johnny Carlson, stuff like that, the guys that have been there forever and had heard it spring to spring. Every spring you hear it time and time again. So it was great for them to get through that, and everybody, all the guys that came through in my age, a little bit younger, who were, part of the groups that couldn't quite get through. I'm sure we're all pretty happy for those guys to finally get through. Now, at the end of the day, you're only halfway home, and you can't be happy with that. The danger was a letdown that you, you'd spend all your emotions and energy trying to get through Pittsburgh, and then you let down and all of a sudden be down 2-0, but then they go up 2-0 in series, and now it's a 2-1 series, and it's pretty fair series. It's a very good team as well, overall, you got to be happy for the guys, and I'm not jealous at all. I'm very, very like happy for them. I think it might be natural to be a little bit jealous of what they've gone through, you know, what they've achieved, but so far. But you know, you can't be anything but happy for those guys.
Have you noticed anything maybe different in Ovechkin's game?
I don't know. I mean, you could say, you know, everything's going together. You could say he's, you know, just aging out a little bit, you know, being in early 30s now, just being smarter about things, probably taking a little bit more, you know, it's kind of the missing piece on his mantle, you know, for sure. That's probably motivating him a bit. You know, I think the production of him here in Kuznetsov, I mean, they're better than a point and a half per game in the playoffs. I mean, that's where you need your stars. Your star, what's helping Washington is like their stars are playing like their stars. You know, when Nick was two until he was injured, you know, you had Johnny Carlson just playing great. And, you know, I'm sure he gets a lot of attention for quarterback and a power play, but he's playing fantastic and logging like huge minutes. And, you know, they get some timely scoring that, what's the hyphenated last name? What's his name? Smith? You know,
Devontae Smith-Bell.
Yeah, I mean, he scored a couple of times the goals. Like, you get some guys chipping in that don't chip in. And then, you know, Braden, I think, has played, you know, since he's come in, he's been fantastic. And so, I don't know, man. It's just a lot of things coming together. You can argue that there's a bit more talent on those teams for sure. You know, on paper, there's been more talent coming through there, you know. But it just didn't get done when it needed to get done. And just right now, the stars are playing like stars. And, you know, it's just kind of, you know, Tom Wilson's play has an effect on games and plays like a force that they haven't had there that can, you know, he's just a thorn in everybody's side. And so, I mean, he's just, and he can chip in. And, I mean, Jay Riegel's playing fantastic. I mean, all these guys are playing great. So, you know, I guess it's just kind of a thing of, you know, and not necessarily the most talented team will win. It's a team that plays like the best, like a team, you know. And so at this, you know, through these 8 weeks. And you know, I mean, there's a ton of talent on that team. Don't get me wrong, but like I said, there's probably been teams with more talent on paper coming through, but. And there may be more teams talented in this. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Tampa's got more talent. You could argue with Vegas. You can argue with Winnipeg as well. But the teams that pull it all together, you know, and get all the key, like you said, timely scoring, stars playing well, goalie playing well, defensemen scoring, not, you know, playing blocking shots, doing everything, staying. For the most, and they haven't. And the ironic part is they've been banged up. Nick's been banged up and they've been suspended. I mean, they've missed players. They've missed key guys. That's a funny part. Usually you don't get that far when you miss key players and have suspensions and injuries. You really don't get very far. But certainly that's not the formula working. I mean, they got a different formula going this year.
Do you remember when you were in the playoffs that there was any added stress maybe inside the locker room or added pressure? Because I know that a lot of the players, you know, have admitted like lately that, you know, or in years past that they felt that pressure of just wanting to go so far that sometimes it might kind of just make them hold their sticks a little bit tighter or just not enjoy the moment.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everybody does it differently. For sure, don't think for a second these guys aren't under the gun right now and are under pressure. The demands that Barry's making on them and what he wants out of everybody. I mean, it's coming to fruition. It's showing up. It's coming out in results, which is great. I don't know, I feel like there's been like this window open for this team since probably, if I got there in 2000, was it 2009 or something when I was there? Yeah, since about 2008, since Obi got there, and Nick got there, and they got some really nice parts in there. So this window they've had here is for about 10 or 12 years right now, 10 years or so right now. And so you always felt like when you're in it and playing on those teams, you know, I just felt like, oh, we're in a great window. You know, I've got Mike Green, you got Nick Betch, you got all these young guys playing well, and we got some good veteran guys. George is trying to bring in veteran guys to help those guys. And just we couldn't quite get it all together. And I mean, I think you always feel, I think we won the President's Trophy 1 year, so yeah, you do feel pressure when you know you've got a good team and try and win it. But, you know, that's what playoffs is, pressure. I guess if you can't play with that kind of pressure, then you're not going to win. So, and maybe, you know, you didn't have, maybe the guys were too young at that point, and now they're older and wiser and just more mature as players, and they've learned how to deal with it. I don't know. You know, like, I guess there's always that implied pressure in the playoffs, and you know, if they feel they're not playing with pressure now and playing free, then let them go with it, you know. So
what did,
but I mean, you got four or five guys there that weren't there for all that stuff. There weren't a lot of these young, I mean, there are a few guys that have been around for 3 or 4 years now, but a lot of those guys were, yeah, I don't know, I guess it's a bunch of them. I guess some of them don't really care either. I mean, I don't know. They just get out there and play and don't worry about what happened in the past.
You know, a lot of people used to make the comparison. Steve Yzerman won a Stanley Cup really late in his career, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Could this kind of be kind of the same thing, or like you're saying, where the Caps have a couple guys who've been playing, you know, their careers all in Washington, and it's just kind of all coming together where, you know, they're kind of smoothing out parts of their game, and, you know, Ovi can score, but then you also see him back checking unbelievably well, and he was always more of a better defensive player than some people gave him credit for, but like it just seems like he's playing more of that. You know, sometimes when I see him watching him play this year, he has a little bit more of that rugged Dale Hunter in him sometimes, with how much he's careening off people, finishing his checks, and how committed everyone is in the defensive zone.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I think sometimes when you're a younger guy, you know, and Ovi won a lot of things, and, you know, won a bunch of accolades, and probably, you know, I don't know how he did when I was younger, but some of these guys get really used to winning things a lot when they're younger. You think it's going to be pretty easy. Oh, we got a pretty good team here. You know, we're going to be here a long time. Get a nice group. We're going to win a bunch right here. Then all of a sudden, 10 years goes by, and you're like, huh, we haven't won anything yet, you know? And so I'm sure there's a little bit of that where guys are like really looking in the mirror and saying, hey, like we got a chance. We're not going to get that many kicks at the can. And, you know, I mean, you could say this, you know, that Steve Yzerman, until Scotty Bowman really got into him and made him, Steve Yzerman was putting up points like crazy. And, you know, if he was an 84 draft pick, so he won a 97. So, you know, that's what, 13 years. So he must have been about 31, 32 when he won for the first time, you know, in 97. And guess who the lead guy is out there blocking shots? And you're, you know, I was Steve Yzerman and killing penalties and being on the first power play, was doing everything, you know. And, you know, the young guys, you know, when I was a young guy, I couldn't help but fall in line and want to be, you know, doing what he's doing. There's your leader doing that, you know. And so, you know, Alex is starting to realize that. It's like, hey, I want to lead a little bit more by example. That might be just the maturation process and him just getting older and thinking about things a little bit more and kind of being realistic with himself, where he's like, you know, and I can do more. It's not, you know, it's more than just scoring goals. If I score goals and we're in a minus two at the end of the night, I can't go home feeling good about that. I'd rather go home plus three and not have any points. You know, maybe he's taking that attitude a little bit more. And, you know, I haven't talked to Alex in a long time, but that's, I'm sure he's feeling that way a little bit more. If I go home and our team's won and I didn't get any points, well, I'm good with that. I'll see you tomorrow and we'll go win another one, you know. So where before it was, you know, could have been more or the other way, you know, like trying to get my points and trying to score and whatever. But maybe that's his maturation process. And yeah, I've noticed, like, he's out there, Barry has him out there at key times, and, you know, it's great to see. And, you know, I mean, Alex is a good guy. He deserves a little love here, and hopefully, you know, he gets some. He's paid his dues and been a fantastic player, and hopefully he's doing something good down the line here.
There was something he did in the morning skate. So every morning for their away games, and this has been all season long, Jay Beagle will do something that Tarik El-Bashir has described as a hot lap, where basically he'll start practice and Jay Beagle will go 100 miles per hour around the rink for a lap, and then they start practice. And it was before game 6 against the Penguins in Pittsburgh, Ovi asked to take that hot lap from Beagle. And I don't know, I just, yeah. It seems like such a small thing, but such a huge thing too. And he's done that every away game since. But it just seemed like everyone, like the whole team kind of came together already. But that was such a leadership moment to me.
So, Alex, that's just like a little thing. It's a little thing for the guys. You know, I actually saw a video clip of that, so I'm familiar with what you talked about. But, you know, it's just a little thing to show that guys, you know, like, you know, I'll help set the tone in practice. And I know that's kind of what Beagle does. He's like, you know, just one of our, you know, just being one of the pluggers going out there and working hard and getting the guys riled up. But then when your captain wants to do it, he's, he's taking notice of and appreciates Jay Beagle for doing that. You know, and the other guys can see, you know, that he respects Jay Beagle for doing that, and respects his message that Jay's trying to get out there to the boys, and then he wants to help do it and help convey that message. I mean, that's just little things where you might not have done it. You know, it might have been strolling on the ice late, not even seeing that lap happen. You know, like when you're younger. You know, but instead now you're out there early and getting the guys ready for practice and setting the tone. So Alex always been a hard worker in practice, and it's good. And anytime you get your superstar out there leading the charge again, that's just growing up and appreciating some of the finer little things of your teammates and trying to find a way to show them you're on board and you're gonna play as hard as they do and play the way you can and still be a superstar. But when it comes down, you got to play some meat potatoes type hockey, you can do that too.
I wanted to ask you too about the championship teams that you played on, in the late 90s. You know, I remember very fondly the 1997-98 season. Well, maybe not fondly, but that year was when the Capitals got into the Stanley Cup final. And
right.
What was it about those Detroit Red Wing teams? How would you sum it up beyond the firepower that you guys had? I remember that the checking line was just a huge part of what you guys did. But what was it about those teams that made them championship teams?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about that. They called them the grind line or whatever. Chris Draper,
yep.
Rick Maltby, Darren McCarty, and sometimes Joey Koser. So they enjoyed what they did, you know. And part of when teams do well is like guys kind of slip into roles and they really enjoy what they're doing. And like Jay Beagle's an example of blocking shots on the penalty killing and trying to get in there and win every faceoff. I mean, he's their faceoff guru right now, you know. And this is a little thing. It's not a goal and it's not assist, but he's doing that and taking pride in it, you know. And you know, nobody's going to score, but he's playing well on the back end, too. He's not just being a one-way player. He's playing the whole ice. And Kuznetsov's been all over the rink and has the puck all the time. And, I mean, you can go down the line on some of these guys. Some of the younger players I don't know quite as well. But even the third and fourth line guys, they're giving you good minutes when they get out there, and they're not hurting you. You know, they're not getting scored on. They're chipping in more than they're getting scored on. I think I was looking at your stats the other day until, I don't know what happened with the last game, but up until game three there, I think there was one regular in the lineup had a minus rating, you know, and so everybody else is plus, and shows you you're going pretty good, and it's pretty good, even your third, fourth line guys who, quote unquote, aren't going to be out for a lot of pluses, well, at least they're not out there for a lot of minuses either, you know, and so they're not killing you at all and giving you serviceable minutes. So it's kind of like the teams that do well, everybody, the stars are the stars, you get good goaltending, and the other guys, without scoring a ton, they chip in every once in a while, and they bring you some value in hard play and not killing you in the defensive zone either.
When you guys won the cup and you guys were celebrating on the ice, I was in my room crying, and I ripped up all my Sergei Fedorov trading cards.
Oh my God! Yeah, it's gonna fit, huh? Yeah.
I hope that makes it sweeter for you and also kind of funny.
I mean, that series finished 4-0, but it wasn't. I think Tiikkanen had an open net, hit the post, and if that would have gone in, it might have changed the whole complexion of things. And then, but it was a close. I mean, I'd love to watch it again. It was a much closer. I mean, it finished 4-0, but it was. I think every game was really, really tight, and a bounce here or there settled each game. It seemed like Detroit got them all that series. But
yeah, from what I remember, it felt like the Capitals were as good or the better team in the first two games, but then after that Tiikkanen and miss happened, it was over. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. No, it was. I'd have to look back a little bit closer, but yeah, I think you're right. It's like the first two games could have gone anywhere, and probably Wash deserved to get out of. They start in Detroit. Yeah, they start in Detroit, so they probably deserve to get out of there with a split or something, you know, and all of a sudden you're down 2-2 or down 2-0, and then you lose the third game at home, and all of a sudden you're in one big time. So
you were a part of the Red Wings like Avs rivalry when everything went nuts and there was those huge fights, right?
Yeah, that was my first game. Was the one when Patrick Waugh and Mike Vernon fought.
Oh my God, you have to tell me about that.
Yeah, no, that's March 26th 1997, but so it's really memorable. Like other people remember it too, you know. But I was nervous as hell. They had just played the week before, and then the game started. It was pretty, like, there were a couple fights right away, and it was like an intense game right away because it was getting. I think there were like 10 games left in the season, so everybody's kind of jockeying for position and trying to figure out for playoffs. And so then Forsberg and Lariana started getting into it, and then everything blew up from there. And I think we were down, like they were killing us. It was 4-1 or something. We ended up coming back and winning in overtime. And everybody felt that was the game that really propelled us and showed like Colorado too, like who had beaten us, I think, the year before. They might have won the whole thing the year before, 96, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But they kind of showed them like, hey, if this is going to go through Detroit, you guys are going through us and we're going through you. And so whoever's left standing is moving on. And pretty much that was the Stanley Cup, you know what I mean? Because we swept Philly that year. So pretty much a conference semifinalist in Colorado was the Stanley Cup, you know, and it was, they were just knocked down. Like their teams just kicked the shit out of each other. Oh, it was like mean hockey, and it was great hockey too. I mean, there were some unbelievable players. I mean, I don't know. You have to go back on those rosters. I would say there's 8 to 9 Hall of Famers playing in those games. I mean, maybe even 10, probably 3 or 4 in each team. Probably 4 in Colorado and probably 6 in Detroit. Like guys are gonna play in the Hall of Fame, and they were playing like there was no tomorrow. Like if the world's ending tomorrow and this is the last game, like guys were taken. They were just, it was mean and it was beautiful at the same time. It was unbelievable hockey. Crazy hockey.
I mean, I remember watching that one game where just everything blew up, and I was so excited as a kid. I mean, how do you feel on the bench?
Yeah, you can't help but be, you have butterflies anyway. Like, you're just, like, scared to death anyway just because it's your first game, and, you're like, oh, man, here we go, and you're trying to figure out how can I stay. I want to stay here. Like, I just don't get out here and screw it up. All your friends and family are watching. Everybody's phone is watching. People don't know are watching. Like, everybody's waiting to see how you're going to do, So the last thing you want to do is go out and screw anything up. You'd like a nice, just quiet game, right? Where you're just kind of, like, no hitting, just kind of, like, nice and easy, just get through it and then kind of worry about the next one, but this thing went nuts, and I was just on the bench and I was like, holy cow, and I thought I was out of the American League, because American League had that stuff a lot more, went up there, and then you're like, wondering how, if you're gonna get drawn into this somehow, because there was some bad blood, with Chris Draper and Claude Lemieux, and Claude Lemieux had hit Chris Draper, blindsided him a bit, broke his jaw and knocked teeth out, so there was a big history going, and you're kind of like, well, I'm in the middle of this, you're kind of running into two gangs, and you're like the new guy. You're like, I don't really have any beef with you guys, but I guess if I'm in here, I'm with these guys, And so, it was crazy. You didn't know how the night was gonna. Is there gonna be anybody left on the benches by the time this game ended? I think it was halfway through the second period. You're wondering who's gonna be left to finish this game, and how many fights. Like I said, there were at least two or three fights before that. And again, I was nervous as hell, but I was nervous because it's my first game. And then you throw that down on it, so then you're a little bit even more wound up. But they won the game, and it's certainly a game that lives. It still lives in Detroit, lives in NHL history for, it's going to be one that lives forever, pretty much. In history.
Yeah, so. I still see it shared on social media. Yeah. Like every like month or two, it'll just pop up back on my timeline because it was just like, I think for a lot of people, the violence of the sport is going down in some ways, whereas maybe hitting is somewhat more violent than others because the game is so fast. But that was just one of those moments where it was almost like hockey turned a little bit into wrestling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, personal things. I mean, sure, some of that was personal. There were scores being settled. Like I said, it was just like they played in the playoffs so much, and it's just like the guys were in their prime, and it was a little bit nuts. It was crazy, man. You didn't know what really was going to happen. They were crazy, crazy hockey games. And at the same time, there was so much going on the ice. There was so much. So, like you said, so many Hall of Famers out there. It was crazy. It was an absolute special time in hockey with those two teams and how good they were, and the players and the personnel on the ice.
Tomorrow night, you're not going to be in Frederick, but there was actually going to be a reunion between the Knubles Knights.
I heard. Yeah, that would have been sweet. I was looking forward to coming out there. I had a feeling I might see you guys out there.
Oh, yeah.
I would have seen you guys out there. That would have been fun. We would have had some fun for sure. I was all fired up to drink some Natty Bow.
Mike, we can make that happen. You know, the summer, when the summer happens, just come on down, all right? Whenever you want. Yeah, we'll make it happen. Right. Okay, well, thank your family for me. Thank you so much.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now, it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.